You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
There's a couple that come to mind, which was when I was in Toronto and I had recently transitioned. So I had been auditioning, you know, perceived as a female, and then audition after I've emerged as my, you know, as my authentic self, which is a man. And I remember showing up at this one audition and there was a woman who was sort of notoriously a little, what's a nice way to say this? Gregarious, maybe. She had a big mouth. Anyway, she was just like, this woman was just like known for just like, you know, just saying everything. And I'm sitting there and I see her. I'm like, oh no, right? And she looks at me. She goes, "You have a sister?" and stupidly, I said, "No." And she's like, no, you look like someone that I used to see a lot at auditions. You have a sister. You must have a sister. Oh, no, I don't have a sister. Come on, you have a sister. You know what? Yeah, I do. I have a sister.
Hello, world, and welcome back to another episode of Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. If this is your first time tuning in, this is the show where I speak to fellow actors about their journey in the industry, and I make them share a couple bad audition stories with me. If you're not following the show on social media, those links are in the show notes. You can also check out our Patreon to see the video version of these interviews. All right, today we have a very, very special guest. I was so stoked to talk to him. You may know him from Henry Danger or Danger Force. He's been in a thousand other things. He's also an acting teacher. I'm putting that link in the show notes as well for his classes. He has a Bachelor of Science in Cell Biology. I mean, he's done everything. He is an icon in the LGBTQ plus community. I'm very excited to welcome the one and only Michael D. Cohen. And welcome to the show, Michael.
Hi, so nice to be here, Jillian. Thanks for having me.
So excited to have you here. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know, I visited the set of Henry Danger back in 2019.
What?
I was shadowing Steve Hafer because he directed me on Victorious and he was kind enough to let me come and hang out with y'all for a little bit. It was so fun. It was such a cool show to see live.
That is phenomenal. You know, yes, I remember you. I barely remember Steve. No, it was, of course I remember Steve. Steve directed so many episodes of our show. That's really cool. Yeah, it's a very fun show to watch. I mean, you know, most sitcoms or multicam shows you watch or you shoot like with an audience, you know. But right. Our show had so many effects and everything that it took 3 days to shoot. And so there was no way to have an audience. I mean, some people will be willing to camp out for 3 days.
Yeah.
But most people won't. So yeah, we had a laugh track for ours, as many, a lot of the kids do, and a lot of the kids shows do now. And also with COVID, they just couldn't have audiences eventually. So, you know, yeah, it's kind of the norm now.
It was a very fun show to watch. I had never seen something that, like you said, has so many effects. But I do remember the best part about my entire trip there was it was also you guys were watching the musical episode. And so I was there and I got to see it ahead of time with all of you. Oh, and it was so fun.
You were at the actual screening that we had in the studio?
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
The beanbags and all. What a great time.
That was really great. That was sort of like, I think of that as sort of a bit of a Nickelodeon heyday. You know, that was.
Yes.
They took care of us and we had popcorn and candy and everybody sat and watched. And yeah, that was very cool. It's cool that you witnessed that.
I know, it was so fun.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into all of the awesome stuff that you're doing now and talking more about Henry Danger and Danger Force, I would love to go back and ask you, what made you want to be an actor?
Wow. Well, let's just say, first of all, let me preface this by saying that anybody that's an actor doesn't really have a choice. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, I also see that very parallel with the gender journey, you know, like you are born a certain way and it's non-negotiable. This is how you are. And I think that being an artist or being an actor or something that's expressive like that, you are born with that need to operate that way in the world. And anything short of that is you not being fulfilling your full potential, but also just feeling wrong in the world. You know, you just feel like I have to do this. I have to do this or I am not going to be able to function properly. And that's sort of, I think I realized that really early on in my life, like 4 years old. And I was watching the Carol Burnett show and actually see her. I have got two pictures now.
Oh, Carol.
Yeah, I've got an old one. I just got a new one that I just got, which was very sweet, very privileged to get this new one that has my name on it. It's like, wow. I was watching the Carol Burnett show at 4 years old and I kind of realized recently that really what it was is like I imprinted on her. Like there was something about who I was, my sensibility around comedy, something about it that watching her show brought that out. It was like I recognized it and went, that's me. That's what I do. Wow. That's who I am. And so that started at a really, really early age. But growing up in Canada and not having access like we do here in LA I couldn't do background. There were no opportunities. So it took a long time. It took a long time to realize my dream kind of thing. But eventually I did, you know, I moved to Toronto, got more work there and then got enough credits to get a visa to move to LA, to move to the States and live in LA and work. So.
Wow. But you went to college and you graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Cell Biology, which just is like those words together don't even make sense to me. I mean, my Lord, you are so smart.
Thank you. I I've always been really academic. So it's always been a bit of a struggle to justify how do I work in an area that isn't really academic? It's much more artistic and expressive versus this sort of left brain thing. I'm very like when you do the Myers-Briggs thing, you know, and there's the thinking feeling like mine is like equal. And so I'm very analytical, but I'm also very, very sensitive. Like sometimes I'm like, oh God, I'm feeling too much.
Feel that so hard.
Do you really? Oh my God. It's hard because some of us are just that way in the world. We feel everything and it's not a world that supports that. So I started off as a theater major and I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I couldn't swing it. I just
really
yeah, I sabotaged my second year audition for, like, I did first year and I sabotaged my second year audition and like, just, it's like, I can't do this. So
wow.
I pursued biology and really loved it. And it really helped me. I think that as an acting coach as well, to help be able to translate how the body integrates with our mind and our emotions and our spirit, to help mm-hmm. people understand that in a grounded way, as opposed to some sort of like, just feel your feet on the floor, which is, I have to say, very useful.
Yes.
But if that's all it is, you know, then it's not helpful. If I can say, listen, you know, there are molecules and there's energy, and this is how energy works in your body. And this is how we can master or at least work towards mastering our energy in our body. That is so much about acting, this kind of shape shifting manipulation of energy within our system is really, it's like an internal martial art. And so yeah. when we approach it that way, it's much more accessible and more fun than this sort of mysterious thing. So I love that I got my undergrad in cell biology, and I love what it gave me. And I love that I understand that and still am interested in it, because it feels like it really, as much as it doesn't seem like it has anything to do with acting, it has everything to do with acting.
You know, I've had a similar conversation with several people on the show, and it's like people who have studied in a different area of academics or whatever have been able to figure out a way to apply it into acting, into the arts.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I studied sociology for a while, and it was so important to me because I figured out how people react to each other, how their community affects them, their person, how everything around them affects who they are, the corner mart, the, you know, park, everything affects who you are. So I think it's really cool that you've been able to take this incredible knowledge that I think for a lot of people would be difficult to understand and apply it into your artistic and creative self. I mean, that's really awesome.
Well, thank you. And, you know, kudos to you too, for being able to take that, you know, sociology is so connected to yeah. being a performer. To the ability to observe others. I mean, I think one of the reasons why Meryl Streep is as great as she is, I'm sure there's many reasons, but one of the things she talks about is her insatiable curiosity about what it feels like to be another person.
Mm.
And so she just immerses herself into the observation and the curiosity, and to the degree that most of us don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it, the, you know, she creates the illusion of just disappearing.
Yeah.
It's a disappearing act. It's, and so, you know, being able to understand sociology is a huge gift.
Thank you. Well, you have been in so many things. You have worked so, so much. But I wonder, do you remember the first time that you were on a set and you were like, man, this is cool. This is special. I'm excited about this.
Yeah. I have always, I mean, I love film, but I also really have an affinity to TV, which is, and TV production, which is, you know, probably the Carol Burnett Show stuff of live, you know, right. from, or not live, but, you know, from CBS Studios in Hollywood, Television yeah. City in Hollywood, you know? And I was like, well, I want to go to Television City in Hollywood. I want to be there. And I remember going into a TV studio, the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in Vancouver, and a friend of mine and I, we were like 12 or 13. We used to go to the tapings of the Renee Simard show, which was like, you know, it was just being in that studio and seeing the cameras, and it was sort of bittersweet because I wanted to be a part of it, but all I was just sitting in an audience, you know, I was like, oh, I want to, you know, but I just felt that there was something, I felt like I was at home, felt like home. Mm. And then when I graduated from university, I started working behind the scenes, like as a PA and things like that, which I completely encourage people to do who are interested in acting, to understand how things work from a production perspective is so helpful. excuse me. So I was working as a PA. And I was on film sets, which felt great, but it wasn't quite, it was like, this is all, you know, I'm outside, I'm where I normally would hang out, but there just happens to be like, I have a traffic vest on and a, you know, an orange cone. Like this doesn't, you know, but when I started working in television behind the scenes and being in studios, that's when I was like, okay, this feels really good. I worked in news, you know, I worked in news, we're operating at the teleprompter, which we had at the time. And then when I got my first acting gig and the camera was right here, like I had to do this scene in a hospital and the camera was literally like, I mean, you can't see my hand. It was probably a foot from my face.
Oh man.
And so like my first acting gig, and I was like, thank you. I feel so good right now. I feel so at home. This camera feels like this was an extension of my being. This camera feels so right. Yeah. And, you know, it's such an odd feeling. It's like, why does having this massive camera in my face feel so good? It did. It just did. I knew I was in the right place. So,
and you've talked a lot about television versus film. And I find it so interesting because so rarely as a artist do you connect with one specific form of art so much. But like you said, it goes back to your childhood. It goes back to Carol Burnett. It goes back to that feeling of like home, like you said, like that home feeling, watching Carol and then realizing when you were there, feeling that.
Yeah, it really does. You know, I remember even in like maybe the fourth season of Henry Danger, at one point I had this moment where I walked, you know, do you walk down the hallway where all our dressing rooms are and then you open up the studio door and I walked in and the smell of the studio, which has a particular kind of scent of construction or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then looking up and seeing the lights and seeing behind the sets, you know, from the man cave on one side and like the living room on that, you know, and I walk in and I just, this feeling hit me. And this is in the fourth season. I was like, God, I love this. Like, I love this. It's, I must've been reincarnated from some TV, from a camera or from a,
had to, know,
something.
Had to.
Yeah. It just the sets, just everything about it just felt like, God, this is so amazing. So it's just a wonderful feeling.
Well, now that we're at Henry Danger, I wondered if you would like to share how you got this role. I mean, this role is so fun. He's such a character. Amazing. Yeah. What was this process like for you?
You mean getting the role?
Yeah. Getting the role and then also maybe just like how you discovered him, because he's so different than you.
Yeah.
How that was for you to create this character.
Well, I give a lot of credit to the writers, you know, to put a character like that into the story. It makes sense. And, you know, they created this, you know, I think at first he was an alien.
Really?
Yeah. First he was written as an alien. And then they made him, you know, just a guy, you know, but yeah, he was from outer space at first, I think. And also, so the story goes that I was called in for an audition for Dr. Mignac, who's played perfectly by Mike Ostrowski, who is probably 6'4", maybe 6'5". He's really tall.
Very tall person.
Very tall person, really talented guy. And the only thing at that point that was on the air that I could watch when I had the audition was the pilot. And, you know, there was the villain played by Ben Giroux. He's like my height. I'm thinking, well, they're not going to hire another, like, what, all the villains on this show, like, under 5'5"? Like, what's the deal? Like, okay, I'll still audition for this, but I don't think I'm going to get it. So I came in, auditioned for it, and Krisha Bullock and Jamie Snow were auditioning, and they were like, they called my manager after and said, really like this audition. We're going to send it to producers, but we also have this character named Schwaz that we wrote out of the series because we couldn't find anybody to do it. Like, how could you not find anybody? Like, I don't get it. What's with this? So he says, okay, do you want to, my manager says, okay, they want to see you back for this character. And they wanted me in on a Monday and I was going on a camping trip, right? And my camping trips are sacred. So I'm like, well, is it at all, do I change my camping trip or is it possible for me to come in on Tuesday? Oh no, you can come in on Tuesday. No problem. You're the only person they're seeing. I'm like, what? So I'm like, okay. So I'm off on my camping trip with this amazing guy who's a Cirque du Soleil. He runs the Idiot Workshop, John Gilkey, right? He's this Cirque du Soleil director, clown, beautiful work. This guy's amazing. And he's making fun of me all weekend while I'm doing these lines, right? Trying to, like, you know, memorize my lines for this audition. Get in on Tuesday, do the audition. It's really weird. Like, it's written really weird, like an alien. And he's like kind of monotone. He goes, ha, 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 laughs really weird. And, you know, but I needed an accent. So I brought this sort of pseudo Eastern European accent, and I my hair was long at the time, and I just kind of pulled it out, so it was kind of crazy.
Wow.
And they loved it, and they were like, okay, this is Schwaz. And what I had found out was they had auditioned kids at first for this role, this alien role. Then they auditioned adults when they couldn't find a kid to do it, and then they gave up because they couldn't find someone that apparently was the sensibility of this character. And then when I came in, they were like, oh, that's it. I'd never had that experience before. And it was pretty cool. Like, it was like, wow. Okay. And it went from there. And then over time, I couldn't see the first season. So I couldn't see how they wanted me to kind of Americanize the accent a little bit. They didn't want it too thick. When I watched it back, I didn't like it. I was like, no, he has to have a thicker accent. We got to do the accent. And so I didn't tell anybody. I just thickened it up. If you notice, from second season on, he's got a way thicker accent.
You're like, I am making the executive choice on this right now.
Yes. And I had to make the accent up because it was a mixture of, you know, some sort of Eastern European, like, you know, a bunch of different Eastern European, Russian, Yugoslavian, kind of.
Yeah, it's
Hungarian.
Like Bosnian, Czech. Like, yeah, yeah. It has a little bit of everything in it.
It's got that. It's got Italian, Israeli, Swedish, and Spanish in it as well. So.
Wow. How do you make that choice when you're looking at the sides for the day or the script for the day? How do you make the choice of what you're going to do?
Certain vowels have certain, like, you know, Ray, right? Which is the main, you know, Ray's Captain Man. So Ray is always Rai, you know, so A is always I. So anything that has A in it, it's I. So you just automatically over time, it just becomes normal to talk like that. You know, O is always, it's never O, it's O. You know, the R's are always Rai, you know. It just has its own, you know, its own weird diphthongs.
That's a beautiful story. But, you know, it also makes me want to say, like, good on the producers and the creators and the writers for saying, we haven't found the right person for this. And we don't want to do an injustice to this role that we've created. And then you walk in and Krisha and Jamie are like, oh my gosh, yes, this is our person. This is who we need.
I learned so much about casting from Henry Danger and from watching Krisha and Jamie, because what I realized was it's an art form. We don't think of casting as an art form. It actually is. They're creating a palette. And it hit me the first time, and I've told them this story, where I remember there was a scene in Henry Danger where all the villains were gathered in this, like, villain dungeon thing. And there was like a dozen of them. And I looked at all of these and I was like, this is a tableau of such beauty. Not, you know, the wardrobe and makeup comes together and also paints on that palette, but the original canvas are these actors that they have put together, and the brilliance of that casting. I just from a physical perspective, sensibility, energy, just, you know, what they brought to each character. It's really like, I went, oh, now I understand what you do. You're not just thinking about a particular role. You're thinking about how that role fits in with other roles, you know, and how that energy moves with the whole machine. And it's pretty cool. So I have a lot of respect for casting directors.
A lot. I have worked with Krisha and Jamie a few different times, and Jamie played my best friend on Victorious when I was on Victorious.
Right.
So it was so fun. They are masterminds. They are so good at what they do. It is remarkable.
We're going to take a quick commercial break and then we'll be right back.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
And back to the show. Before we get into, you know, the audition part of the whole thing, even though I forced you to share this one, I want to make sure to give you a platform. It's Pride Month. I want to give you a platform to talk about your trans journey, what it's like to come out in this industry and how it's been for you and the reception, and also talk a little bit about the incredible thing that you're doing with Nickelodeon, the Trans Youth Acting Challenge, which is so cool.
Okay, you got another couple hours?
Not hours, but we got minutes.
No. Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been a process. You know, when I first transitioned 23 years ago, nobody knew what this was at all. And people know so much more now, don't they? It's like, everything's fine now. There is such profound misunderstanding about what this is. And it breaks my heart. You know, when I transitioned 23 years ago, nobody knew what it was, but there was a certain level of open-mindedness around it that they didn't know what it was. And so they observed me in my process and went, oh, well, that's what it is. Okay. Cause I was their only reference point, really, you know? And I was acting before I transitioned, and I took a short break and then acted after I transitioned. So I felt much, much more comfortable after I transitioned, you know, much more comfortable, because I was being who I was, and acting is a lot about being authentic, and I could finally be authentic. When I chose to disclose publicly, it was at a time when, you know, Trump had been in for a couple of years, but I had made the decision earlier on, and because I just couldn't stand by and watch some of our rights being pulled back and the misunderstanding that was happening and the kind of verbal violence. And so I wanted to be able to express myself. I wanted to be able to say, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't just do it. I had to say it. I had to say, hey, this is what I've been through. And so the Time article came out, and that,
which is a beautiful article.
Yeah. Katie Steinmetz is such a great writer. She did a great job, I think, and she came on set and we hung out, and it was really nice. You know, I felt like we wouldn't do that now. Like now it'd be like, well, so what, right? And then it's like it would be in the midst of all this weird backlash. It was such a different time in, you know, whatever it's been 4 years. But it allowed me, it gave me the freedom to express and to advocate and to do things like the Trans Youth Acting Challenge, which we, you know, was all about, you know, I wanted to do something to support trans youth and mm-hmm. knowing how I felt as a kid, you know, from as young as four and wanting to be a performer and be on television and have opportunities that I couldn't get being in Canada. So I wanted to provide that for these kids. And also for them to see that even though you are having a trans experience and that is the story that you're living, you know, that is this true and very profound story, it doesn't mean that it has to stop you from chasing your dreams or from realizing your dreams. And I really mm-hmm. wanted kids to understand that and know that you can do whatever it is that your heart desires, whatever your calling is, that is perfect for you. And so I asked Nickelodeon to partner with me, and they did. And we created this challenge for, you know, and trans youth would send in tapes, and, you know, and we had a webinar, and then we had a master class. And to this day, we have a database of kids that are actors and are very good actors that are getting roles and opportunities because they're in this database. And we have casting directors calling on us and asking us to, you know, we're casting this. Can you, you know, do you have any kids? And we're like, yeah, we'll connect you with their parents. You know, it's become sadly, it's different right now. And hopefully this is a temporary phase that we're in where, you know, parents very rightfully so are need to protect their kids and not be as public as they were at that time, which was only 4 years ago. There's a massive, massive, profound misunderstanding of the trans experience. What is shocking to me is that we decide that, kids can't decide their gender. Yet they're deciding their gender all the time. We have no qualms about someone who's not trans telling them that they're a boy or girl at 2 or 3, letting them wear their clothes, using pronouns, names, whatever. It's only if they say this doesn't fit that we tell them they can't know. Kids know their gender. We, you know, you knew your gender at a young age. You know, I knew my gender at a young age, even though it didn't fit with what everybody was telling me. Kids know their gender. It's very separate from sexuality. It is not about sex. Mm-hmm. And people get that mixed up. So it's sad that these, you know, that's what's happening now is this profound misunderstanding around it. Kids do not get surgeries. They do not get irreversible treatment.
Right.
They get support. They get therapy. They get, you know, the ability to
live in community,
to live in a, you know, be referred to by the pronouns that fit their gender. Those things are all reversible if needed, and they rarely, rarely ever need to be reversed.
So, right. Well, because it's about being you and that's it. And that's, you know, it should be the simplest thing to understand. And yet, like you said, it's so difficult for people. And it's I don't know, growing up in a space where I've been an actor since I was a kid. So I feel like I've always been a very open-minded and I've been surrounded by everybody my whole life. So to me, it doesn't make sense when people don't accept people for just who they are.
Yeah, and it's who they are. It's not a choice.
Yeah.
It's like being born with brown eyes.
And it's not hurting you. It's not hurting them. It doesn't do anything to their life at all.
I would say the people out there who have some judgments or don't understand this, that's fine. Just please go and educate yourself. Please go and learn. Please understand your biases and dig in so that you're not hurting people. You know?
Yeah.
So.
One other question I have on this, and I know that we're running out of time, but I want to know how you
hour and a half left.
I only have an hour and a half left. Okay. I want to know what you feel is happening within our industry, the entertainment industry. Do you feel like there has been good strides made? What do you think we can do as a community to better uplift trans actors?
Cast actors of trans experience in non-trans roles.
Yeah.
And put writers of trans experience in the writing rooms and nurture them to become showrunners. Mm. include more directors of trans experience. Let's get some executives in TV of trans experience. Let's just get more people out there who have this experience, because, you know, it's not quite infiltrated into the diversity conversation yet, in the way that other marginalized groups have. It's getting there, but sometimes it's a little bit tokenism as opposed to something substantial. And we really need to have something more substantial, more, you know, there's a program, a writer's program that I was starting to work on to nurture writers of trans experience. And that's on hold for a little bit until we kind of get through this. We got to get through a strike.
We got to get through
some other things. But I think it's really important that we start having, you know, we are seeing more characters like that. Like, I just finished binge watching Somebody Somewhere, you know, and there's this wonderful, you know, trans/maybe non-binary, I'm not sure how they identify, but there's a character in there, and I just love the way they dealt with that character. Love it. It's so brilliant. Things like that change people's lives. And it's just innocuous. It's just like, yeah, that person's just there, and this is what they bring to it, and and their story is relevant and interesting. And so I think we're on the right track. We just have to get a little bit more committed to it and specific.
I love that you said that those characters change people's lives, because it's true. I mean, it's like watching Halle Bailey become Little Mermaid now. You know, it's changing kids' lives. All of these incredible strides are changing kids' lives. And I'm sure that, you know, you have been an inspiration to so many. I'm sure that so many kids are so thankful for you and your voice and your talent. Aww. And so it's wonderful to hear that.
There's nothing more important than that. You know, gonna get choked up, getting all verklempt. But no, I mean, what else is there other than what you leave behind, you know, in your experience doing it while you're there? You know, what's been wonderful about working on the shows has been, it's so easy to make a kid happy. I mean, you just take a picture with them, and you've made their day. I'm like, really? Is that? I wish it was that easy with adults. take a picture and you're happy. Like, but you know, it's not hard to help, and so, you know, we want to do that as much as we can.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, on this show, we like to share embarrassing and funny and awkward audition stories. Now, I know you shared the Henry Danger one, but that one was so good. do you have any other stories that you'd like to share with the listeners?
There's a couple that come to mind, which was when I was in Toronto and I had recently transitioned. So I had been auditioning, you know, perceived as a female, and then auditioned after I've emerged as my, you know, as my authentic self, which is a man. And I remember showing up at this one audition, and there was a woman who is sort of notoriously a little, what's a nice way to say this? Gregarious, maybe. She had a big mouth. Anyway, she was just like, this woman was just like known for just like, you know, just saying everything. And I'm sitting there and I see her, I'm like, oh no, right? And she looks at me, she goes, you have a sister? and stupidly I said, no. And she's like, no, you look like someone that I used to see a lot at auditions. You have a sister, you must have a sister. Oh, no, I don't have a sister. Come on, you have a you know what? Yeah, I do. I have a sister. I have a sister. Like,
you're like, I just need you to stop.
Yeah. And that happened once with a commercial audition where there was a director, a sort of similar thing happened where they're like, you look a lot like, you know, and they say my old name. I'm like, yeah, I know we do. Are you related? And by that time I had learned, yeah, we're related. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause it wasn't that I was hiding something. It was just, it wasn't the right time. I mean, it was a callback. There was like all these agency people there, and it was just like, and it's 2001. Like, I'm not, you know, what am I going to do? And so I'm like, yeah. they go, wow, like, you know, how is she doing? Like, oh, she's great. She's so talented. So talented. She's wonderful things. Wonderful things. Leading. She's a lead in a movie now. Yeah. Yeah. Really? What movie? I'm like, uh-oh. You know what? I better go. I gotta go.
Uh-oh. Gotta leave. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. There's a few awkward situations like that, but, you know.
We've made it on the other side.
Yes. It doesn't happen anymore. Thank God.
Oh, wow. Well, I have had such a fantastic time talking to you, and I feel like I could probably talk to you for another few hours.
Stay tuned for part 2, 3, and 4 coming
and
up.
Four. Yes. Yeah. This is actually going to turn into a mini series.
Why don't we just make the whole podcast? Just it's the Michael yeah. Dupont podcast. That's all you need. Yeah.
Bada bing. It's changed now. but I want to give you the opportunity to talk about anything else that you're working on. I know that you've also directed and you've gone into that foray of things. So do you have anything else yeah. that you are currently seeking to work on?
Well, I'm officially in my multi hyphenate phase of my career now. I've been directing and I love it, and I'm going to continue doing that. I'm really excited about it. I've got a couple of TV pilots and series pitches that I'm, you know, putting out that I think are really good. I think people are going to love. So I'm really excited about moving those forward. The solo show that I was going to do that was called Four Cubits Make a Man, that is now called Man Interrupted. It was supposed to go up at the Skylight Theater in LA in May of 2020. And then, then there was like this virus.
So weird.
I know. I was like, okay, we can't do it. I'm like, really? It's just a cold. Why? So that got put on hold. And so that's going to be in the works hopefully in the next year.
Yay.
And then there's a couple other things I can't really talk about, but I'm really excited about what's coming up, and I will have it on my website and on my socials and stuff like that. So please follow
Which, speaking
me.
Of, what are your socials so that people can follow you?
Instagram is Michael D. Cohen. TikTok is Michael D. Cohen. Facebook is Official Michael D. Cohen. And I'm kind of phasing out Twitter, but Twitter's Michael D. C-S-E-E, but I'm kind of not posting there anymore.
It used to be so fun.
Yeah.
I miss the Twitter days. Yeah. They're gone.
No, they're gone. I'd rather just do Instagram and TikTok and
get it. Totally get it. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It has been so fun talking to you, and I feel like you are just such a bright light in this industry, and so, so wonderful everything that you're doing and who you are. You're just wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you. Like, I just hit my microphone. That was good. Thank you. And likewise, it's been so much fun talking with you.
Thanks again to Michael for spending some time with me and coming on the show. It was such a joy to talk to him and to learn from him. And again, if you are interested in his acting classes, make sure to check out the show notes. There's a link down there. Click it and it will take you to the place where you need to be. Tune in next week for another fun-filled episode. And as always, thanks for coming in.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the sleep habit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.